today. Spirit Drake Insurance versus American General Life. Mr. Amir.
Amer, thank you.
Amer. All right.
May it please the court, Andrew Amer for the appellant, All American. The district court's decision imposing an affirmative obligation on a reinsurance broker to police the relationship between the reinsurer and its underwriting agent stands agency law and reinsurance industry custom and practice on its head. In this case, Sphere Drake authorized an entity known as EIU to act as this underwriting agent to issue personal accident and health reinsurance. And it did so consistent with industry custom and practice pursuant to a written agency agreement known as the binding authority. And it put that binding authority out into the marketplace for the express purpose of notifying the broker market that EIU was so designated as its agent.
Now, can you just put this thing in perspective? I'm trying to, it's really complicated situation here. But for you to ultimately win at the end of the day, am I correct here that you would have to have us reverse this grant of summary judgment on the excess authority claim, and you go back to the district court where the fiduciary duty claim was not ruled on, could lose on that. If you win on that, or lose on that in the district court and come here and get that reversed, which will be the fourth time this case has been here, then you go into arbitration. Would not go into arbitration?
No, the fiduciary duty claim is the claim that's arbitrable. So if this court were to reverse and to instruct the district court to enter summary judgment in All American's favor on the apparent authority.
Okay, then
the district court would refer us to arbitration.
Then you go into arbitration on the fiduciary duty clause.
Correct.
But you were.
And
you
and then
six, weren't you, in arbitration on the other policies?
Well, that may come back before this court as well. But at least in this case, the last time we were before this court as the appellant, the district court's decision was reversed. Now, I'm happy not to appear before this court again if the district court can get it right. But the district court got it wrong, so here I am asking that this court correct the erroneous decision of the district court. Now, Sphere Drake, having, as we say in the reinsurance industry, given away its pen to EIU to underwrite risks on its behalf, would, as you would expect, appointed an employee of its company to oversee and supervise the underwriting activity of EIU, because it's a serious thing when you give your pen to an agent. And the individual at Sphere Drake, charged with the responsibility for overseeing this binding authority and the underwriting activity of EIU, was an individual known as Victor Broad, who was the director at Sphere Drake. And there's no dispute on this record that Mr. Broad fell asleep at the wheel. He received monthly reports from EIU listing all of the risks bound by EIU in that month and giving the amount of premium. He initialed those monthly reports. However, he admits he never read them, didn't bother to. He didn't have any desire to actively oversee this binding authority. And Sphere Drake's own witnesses have acknowledged that Mr. Broad was sloppy and failed to adequately supervise this binding authority. And indeed, that's a finding that the district court incorporates into its decision at page 33. So as between Sphere Drake, which gave away its pen to EIU and then failed to adequately monitor the underwriting activity of EIU, and All American, which relied upon the binding authority, as is customary in the industry, to evidence EIU's agency authority, clearly the financial consequences of any unauthorized underwriting activity by EIU should fall on Sphere Drake, because Sphere Drake has no one to blame but itself. this is the result that should have been obtained in the district court under a proper application of the apparent authority doctrine and reinsurance custom and practice.
Did Spear Drake ever tell American General that it intended to honor the Unicare reinsurance contract?
It did so in multiple ways. First,
how?
It put out into the marketplace the binding authority, which is a written agency agreement signed by Spear Drake, the principal, authorizing EIU to enter into reinsurance contracts on Spear Drake's behalf. Now, if that's not telling a third party who's going to do business with you that you will honor the contracts entered into by the agent, then I don't know what is. Second, Spear Drake accepted premium under this contract, over $3 million worth of premium, and at no point in time after this contract was bound and premium was received by Spear Drake, did Spear Drake object until many months later to the fact that this contract was bound. And by that point in time, it was too late for All American to go back into the marketplace to find a replacement reinsurer because losses had already come in under the policy, and you can't reinsure a risk where the losses are already known. So absolutely, Spear Drake gave many indications, all of which are consistent with industry custom and practice, that it was going to honor any reinsurance agreements entered into by EIU. And I might further add that this was not the first piece of business that All American did with Spear Drake. There were other contracts that were entered into earlier in time between these parties through these same agents, and premium was paid under those contracts as well. So absolutely, Sterling Cook gave every indication to All American and to All American's agent, Webb, that contracts bound by EIU would in fact be honored. Now, the district court committed reversible error in applying the apparent authority doctrine in this regard. The district court held that the broker's knowledge of the fact that there was in existence the concept of a premium limit under the binding authority, even though, as written in the binding authority, it was a limit that was to be increased over time, that in and of itself, without actual disclosure of the premium limit amount, was sufficient to impose upon the broker the affirmative duty to ferret out what the limit was and to monitor and police the underwriting activity of EIU to determine when, in fact, that premium limit had been breached. Now, mind you, Spear Drake's own employee was burying its head in the sand. So to impose that burden on the reinsurance broker, as opposed to the principal of the agent, on facts which are not in the least bit atypical in the industry, which is you have a binding authority where there is a concept of a premium limit, but no actual amount of the premium limit disclosed, clearly is error. Now, the premium limit was not disclosed to Sterling Cook by choice. Spear Drake chose to keep the premium limit a private matter of negotiation between itself and its agent, and chose not to broadcast to the marketplace all of the changes over time, the increases in the premium limit. And one could easily understand why a principal would not want to broadcast to the broker market the precise dollar amount of an agent's authority. That's something that's private between the principal and the agent.
Was that an issue that was involved at all in that English
Litigation?
The English litigation, which, by the way, All American and Webb were not parties to, involved, I think more directly, the fiduciary duty claim, which this court held was subject to arbitration. And so that's really a different issue that the district court did not address and was not briefed.
So how did, I understand it, but how there were some findings in that case about knowledge and all those sorts of things.
And that's the issue that the arbitration panel will have to resolve when that issue is presented to the arbitrators and whatever the English.
So there's no relationship between the fiduciary duty aspect of the case and the apparent and express authority?
I don't believe so. This is a straightforward issue of whether or not there was apparent authority on the part of the underwriting agent, EIU, to bind this contract. If you find that there was apparent authority and that the contracts were therefore entered into within the authority of the agent, then you address the fiduciary duty claim and you look at the conspiracy allegations and all the rest of it. But the English judge, his decision, of course, would not be binding in any way on Webb or All American, which weren't parties to that case. And in fact, Justice Thomas, in his decision, specifically says that he's not intending to bind people that are not before him, nor could he. So Speardrake, by design, chose not to disclose the amount of the premium limit that was in existence in mid-'98 to Sterling Cook. Now, the other part of the equation, of course, is how much premium had EIU written as of mid-'98, because you not only need to know the limit, but you need to know how much EIU had written in order to know whether the limit had been exceeded. And this was another piece of information that Sterling Cook, as the broker, not only did not know, but could not be expected to know, because EIU was doing business with other brokers. And clearly, it's not Sterling Cook's position to know the business that was being written through its competitors, nor would you expect that EIU or Speardrake would share that information with Sterling Cook. And that's consistent with industry custom and practice. Every witness who testified on this issue in the case, including Speardrake witnesses, Sterling Cook witnesses, agreed that Sterling Cook, as a matter of industry custom practice, would have no obligation to monitor the premium level being written by EIU. And those that testimony is at pages 16 and 17 of our brief.
Now, Speardrake notified Cook in January of 99, did he?
Well, there was an issue over posting letters of credit, so that brought it to a head. Because at year-end, you need to have letters of credit posted. But that is now months after the August 98 audit that Speardrake conducted, which the district court erroneously found would not have provided Speardrake with information necessary to determine that the premium limit had been exceeded. But clearly, it would have. If you know that the slip was signed in June of 98, which is apparent on the face of the slip, and the premium was at least $5 million, and you know from a May 98 Bordereau report that there had already been $9 million in premium written, you don't have to be a genius to add 9 and 5 and get $14 million, which is $2 million over the limit. I did want to save some time for rebuttal, so thank
sure.
you very much.
All right. Ms. Snyder.
May it please the court. All Americans' arguments in this case rest on apparent authority, and that's in order to avoid the fact that Sterling Cook knew there was no actual authority. It isn't a matter of requiring Sterling Cook to monitor what EIU was doing. It is undisputed that Sterling Cook had a copy of the binding authority and that Sterling Cook saw that there was a premium limit in that binding authority. It is also undisputed that Sterling Cook knew that EIU had written $14.3 million of premium before Unicare, and therefore knew that EIU was acting in excess of that premium limit.
Well, why didn't Drake immediately rescind the Unicare agreement when it discovered that they had EIU had exceeded the premium underwriting limit?
Speardrake learned in August 1998 that EIU had exceeded the premium limit. However, there is no evidence that Speardrake had a copy of the May 1998 bordereau in its possession, or that Speardrake could tell the order in which the contracts were written to know that Unicare was written in excess of that limit.
Well, why did it try to get reinsurance for the contract if it didn't intend to honor it?
Sverdrake did not go out to purchase reinsurance specifically for the Unicare contract. As part of the...
What did it do?
It went out, and EIU and Sterling Cook said, as a solution to problems, you guys don't want all this business, we can go out and find reinsurance for you. Sverdrake authorized them to go out and look for reinsurance. But during this time, Sverdrake had very many concerns about the book of business written by EIU. It was trying to validate those concerns, and it had no expectation on the knowledge it had at the time that EIU or Sterling Cook would be able to place reinsurance at all, because it required that there be full disclosure of what had happened at EIU and a meeting between Sverdrake and any potential reinsurer. So Sverdrake was keeping the lines of communication open with EIU and Sterling Cook to try to find out more information about what had happened. Things looked suspicious, but it couldn't validate its concerns. All American also tries to blame Vic Broad and sloppy monitoring by Vic Broad for Sverdrake's failure to discover this breach of the premium limit. But the fact is, the information provided by EIU to Sverdrake during the course of 1998 showed that EIU was writing business within the premium limit. Sverdrake subsequently discovered that EIU was misreporting the amount of premium and lying to Sverdrake on the bordereau, but that is not something that could have been discovered at the time.
Why didn't Mr. Drake more supervise him more thoroughly?
Sverdrake did supervise EIU and appointed a cover holder, Horace Holman International, which was a registered Lloyd's broker and entity, in order to help carry out a supervisory and administrative function. But the fact is, we're blaming the victim right now. Sterling Cook and EIU conspired together to subvert the binding authority to Sterling Cook's
interest. Are you trying to shift the responsibility to General?
Not trying to shift the responsibility to General, because the fact is, its agent Sterling Cook knew EIU was not authorized because EIU was in breach of the premium limit, and American General's agent Webb made absolutely no inquiry of Sverdrake whatsoever as to whether or not EIU was authorized. It didn't request a copy of a written agency agreement. In fact, Webb had no communications with EIU even, let alone Sverdrake, during the course of 1997 or 1998. So there's no indicia of authority flowing from Sverdrake that Webb relied on, although American General argues now that Sverdrake put out in the marketplace this binding authority. Webb didn't know about it. Webb didn't have a copy. Sterling Cook had a copy, and Sterling Cook saw that there were limits on EIU's authority. American General also argues that Sverdrake accepted premium. The evidence in the record does not show that Sverdrake ever knew it had received premium for the Unicare retrocession. The evidence American General points to shows that EIU received premiums, but not that Sverdrake did. And American General argues that it was too late for it to go back in the market to find reinsurance when Sverdrake informed it in January of 1999 that it did not consider the Unicare retrocession to be a valid contract. Sverdrake has put into evidence uncontroverted affidavit from an expert that this particular contract was not placeable at arm's length in the marketplace because it was commercially unreasonable based on the information that All American and Webb had at the time. All American also argues this was not the first piece of business that it had written to Sverdrake. But again, if you go back and look at the facts, the only interactions Webb, All American's agent, had with Spear Drake were via Sterling Cook. It paid premium to Sterling Cook. It had no idea whether those premiums were actually transmitted to EIU, and it had no idea whether those premiums were then transmitted to Spear Drake. So prior conduct and prior contracts is of no help to them. I would like to point out that the English litigation did address the existence of a premium limit, and the court there did find that there was a premium limit, and the writing of Unicare was in breach of that limit. It will also be Spear Drake's argument that because Sterling Cook is All American's agent, All American is bound by findings in the English litigation. In short, the undisputed evidence is that there was a premium limit in the binding authority. Sterling Cook had a copy of that binding authority. It saw that changes to the premium limit were done by amendment to the binding authority. It never took reasonable steps to inquire as to whether that premium limit was increased. And that is an obligation it has, leaving aside the question of whether or not there was any obligation to monitor the activities of Spear Drake's agent. Sterling Cook knew there was a limit on authority, and it needed to make reasonable inquiries to determine if that limit had been lifted. It didn't do it, and it knew that what it was placing with EIU was in excess of a limit known to it. There's no actual authority, and therefore All American cannot bootstrap into an argument of apparent authority. It also cannot create ratification out of whole cloth. It is undisputed that there were material facts about the transaction that were not known to Spear Drake, even up until the time it told All American it was rescinding the contract. Yugoslav American Cultural Center case talks about ratification in the context of an unauthorized sale of property. And in that case, the court said even though Yugoslav American learned there had been an unauthorized sale, it could not have ratified because it did not know the terms of the transaction or how the purchase price was paid. Here, it is undisputed that Spear Drake did not know all the material terms of the transaction. It did not know that there had been a misrepresentation that there was only $6.2 million of premium and the actual premium was far higher. In January 1999, Spear Drake asked questions to EIU and Sterling Cook at a meeting and inquired, what are the material facts about this transaction? EIU's files have very little information. And Sterling Cook and EIU responded, the information is in Sterling Cook's file, not EIU's file. So it's undisputed that Spear Drake did not have all of the information about the transaction. Finally, looking at Webb as opposed to Sterling Cook, All American can't use Webb either to establish actual or apparent authority because there are no communications that Webb made with Spear Drake to get evidence of authority. A binding authority floating out in the marketplace with an actual limit in it doesn't create authority. This case is actually quite simple. Was there authority? There wasn't. Did Sterling Cook know there was no authority? It did. Does that mean there's no actual or apparent authority and no contract form? It does. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hines. On rebuttal, I just want to quickly address ratification. Opposing counsel said there's no evidence that Spear Drake had the May 98
where a monthly report, that's just not correct. At A-556, there's a copy of the May bordereau that Mr. Broad initialed, and he acknowledged in his testimony that he initialed it, that those are his initials. He also acknowledged but that he didn't read it, but that doesn't mean they didn't have it. And so they had the May report. They knew as of the end of April the premium written was $9.6 million. And the only other piece of information one needs to know is to look at a copy of the Unicare slip, which was bound in June 98, which obviously is after the May report, and carries a premium on its face of $5 million. So if you know as of May that they've written $9.6 million, and you know by looking at the contract, which is bound in June, that there's an additional $5 million, you know by those two facts that the premium limit has been exceeded. So clearly they knew more than enough in August, early August of 98, Sphere Drake, to know that this particular contract exceeded the limit. There is simply nothing unusual about the way that this particular reinsurance contract was negotiated and bound. Both parties acted through underwriting agents. There was an intermediary that was the go-between. The authority of EIU was evidenced by a binding authority, which is custom and practice, custom in the industry. The premium limit, actually in effect, was undisclosed. And in that regard, the Meyer Steel Drum case is directly on point. That is a case involving an insurance agent with an undisclosed limit where the Illinois court held that there was apparent authority. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. All right, thanks to all counsel.